Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Taking a little look at the hail outside the Sunbury Motors Studio. They claim that hail will fall for the next 5 minutes here. Hail. Fabulous.
Nephew's All game right. may get rained out tonight. May have to wait till Thursday to catch him play.
Well, you know what?
Safety first.
Well, I think it's just deliberately happening to keep you away from the games.
Hey, I've been on great behavior.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I have to talk to Deb.
Yes.
I need to talk. Deb and I need a conversation where honesty comes into play, and I trust her completely.
Oh, she won't sugarcoat. She won't waste time. She'll just get right to the point.
Perfect. That's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm looking for. Play-by-play call of the day.
And a swing and a deep drive to right. And it's up. And it's out of here. Andrew McCutchen wins it for the Pirates.
Oh, my goodness. Call the doctor. Call the cops. The Pirates just stole the baseball game.
Joe Block and Steve Blass on the Pirates radio network yesterday as Andrew McCutchen, for the first time in 2 years, hits a walk-off home run. It's a great moment for him. Great moment for the fans. And that victory yesterday, to their credit, kept the Pirates in last place. All right, so Pirate fans, don't do that to us. You're not very good. All right. But you know what's interesting about that division? All right, let's look at all the last place teams. Toronto is 6.5 back of the Yankees. The Royals are 6.5 back of the Twins. The A's are 13 back of the Astros. The Phillies are 13.5 back of the Nationals. The Padres are 13 back of the Colorado Rockies. And then there's the Pirates, who are in last place. 3.5 back of the Brewers. Brewers are 3 over 500. Pirates are 4 under 500. So, you know what? Not bad. They may be in last place, but they're not that far out. They're a game out of fourth. They're 2 out of second. All right, the Tiger Woods situation. Obviously, you know, whatever pain he's in from back surgery, whatever. He was not pulled over for DUI. In fact, he wasn't pulled over. They found him asleep in the car, but in the right-hand lane with the engine running and with the blinker on. Now, he could not pass the field sobriety test, but when it came to a breathalyzer, he had 0.00, and he took it twice, once in the field and once at the station. And this guy's had 4 back surgeries. And you'll have an arraignment on July 5th. According to the police report, Woods had extremely slow and slurred speech, struggled with several roadside tasks. The report noted that the golfer changed his story about where he was going and where he was coming from, originally saying he was coming from L.A. and was on his way to Orange County, before stating they had no idea where he was. He was in Jupiter, Florida at the time. Woods told police he was taking several prescription medications, including two painkillers. They said he was cooperative as much as possible, and he agreed to take a breath test and a urine test. The breath test was 0.00. Both the tires on the driver's side of Woods' car were flat at the time of his arrest. It was almost there was also damage to the front and rear bumpers. So that's, you know, there's more details out as to what happened. I don't know. I mean, there's several interesting aspects to this. Number one, you hear DUI, so you do make an assumption, which then leads to all the columns of where has he gone wrong in life. Well, it turns out where he went wrong on this was bad prescription medication in all likelihood, and then also not being in tune enough to, with a person of means, to say, look, until I get through this, I need a driver. And who knows what was going on. But that's the problem. We don't know what was going on. Then there's ESPN. Did you see what ESPN did? They photoshopped the they photoshopped his arrest photo. Do you know that? I guess in the photo, his hair is, you know, his at the police station, his hair is sticking up and whatever, and they photoshopped a different look of the hair.
Yeah, it didn't take long for the newspaper headline artist in New York, the Post and the Daily News, to come up with the catchy headline, DUI of the Tiger.
Yeah, I know.
With the mugshot.
Right.
So with the whole 0.0, that whole kind of blows that headline up.
Well, I mean, and that's the point here. Remember, what as the story trickles out, DUI. Now, nobody says anything about, okay, whether it's alcohol or not. They said it was DUI, which is an accurate assessment. But then you hear, what's the next part of the story? It's been reported by some sources that he refused a breathalyzer at the scene and that the officer smelled alcohol in his breath. Okay. Turns out neither one of those is true. He was belligerent at the scene. I heard that one this morning. Turns out that's not true. See, I mean, you've got to get to the point. I mean, when you do this, there's a responsibility that comes with this job of accuracy and fairness. It is not about being first and screaming to the world, look at me, I got the story, look at me, I've got sources, you know. That's not how it works. You need, I mean, I've told my class repeatedly, I'd rather have all of you be second and right than first and wrong. Now, as for what kind of help he needs, that's for other people to determine, but I'm talking within this profession. It's a part that bothers me about, there's so many people in the profession now So many people in it. That I you know, I don't know. I know I'm old-fashioned on this stuff. But you want to be able to believe what you read, believe what you hear, believe what you're watching. And you can't have some people along the way report things in such a way where you lose your trust in what you're hearing, in what you're reading, and what you're watching. By the way, Josh, you're always going to join us today from DKPittsburghSports.com. We're going to talk about the Penguins. Let's find out if Josh learned anything last night, because I don't think I did. That was one of the oddest hockey games I've ever seen in my life. I mean, that was different.
Yeah, definitely had a lot of turning points, especially with the Coach Sullivan's challenge on the prior to the PK Subban goal with the offside. That was really you'd think the video would be a lot more clearer than that. I mean, it's just a fine line from the ice to the skate, and I'm just trying to look closer and closer to the screen. Is the skate really up off the ice? Is the tip still touching the ice? And
I thought it was off the ice. Even on that blurry look, and I don't think they got it right. Now, Josh may have a different opinion. Keep in mind, too, that we're looking at the American feed of it. They obviously have more feeds in Toronto. They may have had a Canadian feed. They may have had a European feed. I don't, you know, they may have shown something different. I don't know.
Edzo, I think, made reference to that last night. He said that they definitely would have, in the home office, would have more angles.
And as he said, it's the only show in town. You know, so being the only show in town, it's the only game they're watching. It's not like, oh, hold on a second, the Wild Blues game has something going on. We need to talk to that. So we'll talk to Josh about that at the bottom of the hour, 4:35, we'll have him on. Which means we probably can do our sports bozo of the day next. We'll get that out of the way so we can talk to Josh right away. It's pretty obvious what the sports bozo of the day happens to be. We'll talk about that in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us. Sports bozo of the day. That brawl between the Giants and the Nationals, first of all, I mean, he hit two home runs off him, 2 years ago, and he's throwing at him? So he hits him in the backside with it. Then Bryce Harper charges the mound. He throws the helmet, and he throws it so wild that he makes you think like he's mad at the first baseman. That's the direction it went in. And then they traded some punches. And my favorite guy in the whole thing is Buster Posey. This guy sits back and goes, I'm not getting involved in this. This is, you can just tell. This isn't, no. This is stupid. As you know, I have railed on the unwritten rules of baseball. I just don't.
That's the first thing I thought of when Chris Elio and I were talking about the brawl in the hall earlier today.
I just don't. You know, I mean, you really want to hurt him? Strike him out. Make him mad. Embarrass them. Strike them out. That's how I look at it. I don't know.
It makes you wonder when the statute of limitations is when it comes to holding a grudge against another player or another team. Or
yeah, I just don't. I don't get it. First of all, I mean, a baseball is not soft. You're taking an object and you're throwing it at another person. Really? That's, you know, that's part of the unwritten rules of baseball? It's just, I don't get it. I don't get it. And I'm watching this yesterday. You know, the funny part is the part where he throws his helmet. It's like, okay, what's he so mad at the first baseman for? I mean, he missed by a mile on that one. I don't know if he's trying to scare him or he's just so out of control. I don't know. That was ridiculous.
It almost had kind of like a little boy slammed the helmet on the ground, I'm taking my ball and go home kind of move.
Isn't there some point where if you're Rob Manfred, you're embarrassed by all this? I thought the Red Sox reaction to the Machado-Pedroia thing was just absolutely absurd, immature, and wrong. Okay? Just wrong. Right now this. I mean, do you think this is the end of it? This isn't the end of it. After a while, you know how much I love the game. I love the game. Always have. But stuff like this just gets to be just completely ridiculous. I don't know. It can't be. It's not good. It's not good for the game. All right. It's just not good for the game. It's flat out is not. And if you think it's good for the game, oh no, this is just part of baseball. No, it's not. Sorry. I mean, there's playing hard, and then there's playing, then there's being ridiculous. That was ridiculous. That whole sequence was ridiculous yesterday. It's ridiculous. At least I thought so. And completely ridiculous. I don't know. That was an easy call as the sports bozo of the day, don't you think? An easy call. Wow. All right, so that was yesterday. Like I said, the Red Sox reaction to what happened with Manny Machado, I thought was absurd. Now, is this going to happen again? It's probably a good chance. All right, we'll talk about pucks next. Josh Yoey is going to join us. Josh has been with us before. Does a great job covering the Pens. Now he does it for DKSports.com. Have you noticed, like during the Indy 500, when you're like, you keep deleting the suit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a persistence there.
Sure.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The Penguins won game one of the Stanley Cup final last night, 5-3 over Nashville, and went 37 minutes and 9 seconds between shots on net. But when they did take a shot, they knocked it home. Jake Guentzel broke a 3-3 tie. But it was a night where Nashville, there was a puck that went off a player, so an own goal. They had a goal wiped out on an offside penalty after review. And it was just a crazy, crazy game last night that the Penguins won. They don't do these things on style points. This is not gymnastics or ice hockey. It's the first team to win four games. The Penguins need to win three more, and Nashville still needs to win four more. But I really, other than winning the game last night, I didn't take much out of the game. We'll get to Josh Yeo in a few moments. Frank DeFord, the legendary, the great sports writer with Sports Illustrated for many years, for a year and a half was with the National, and of course was on NPR for the last, oh my goodness, what, 35 years he did that? Over 1,600 commentaries, I know that. Passed away on Sunday at the age of 78. And he did a lot of work on behalf of cystic fibrosis, daughter that had that. Casey Johnson wrote to Ford a letter before he went on his way to Beloit College. And Frank DeFord wrote him back. June 27, 1985. Dear Casey Johnson, thank you for your lovely letter about Alex. It's very gratifying to know that her story touched you so, and I hope her example can stay with you. Also, don't give me too much credit. I was just lucky enough to be her father. I wish you the best of luck at Beloit. I've always understood that it's a top school. But believe me, you'll make a much better sports writer if you ground yourself in a broader reading and writing background. Don't be afraid to expand your horizons. Good luck and thanks again. With best wishes, Frank DeFord. Now, within that letter, you get the personal touch that someone would take the time to write you. The humility that I was just lucky enough to be her father. And then the advice on what makes you a better sports writer. That you need to broaden your horizons. Read. Write. Don't be afraid to expand your horizons. That's really important in all media. In all media, that you need to have the ability to, or you should have not just singular interest. I may broadcast on a play-by-play basis football, basketball, and baseball as my three primary sports. But you have to know a little bit about everything. At some point, the World Cup will come up. At some point, business will come up. At some point, like now with Josh, the NHL is going to come up. At some point, we'll have Dick Girardi on talking about the Belmont Stakes. We'll talk horse racing. You know, we had Alan Bestwick on last week talking about the Indianapolis 500. Tony Knapp was on talking about business last week. But you also have to be grounded within, like, in history. I'll give you an example of that. This year, for example, the State College Spikes will play the Williamsport Crosscutters on the 4th of July at Williamsport. Now, at some point, I'll talk probably about Williamsport and about historic Bowman Field hosting the Cardinals and the Pirates on August 20th. But I'll also talk about, on the 4th of July, about the number of minor leaguers because of the wars that have been fought over the past century. And in particular, World War II. How many minor leaguers derailed their career because they served their country? How many lost their lives serving their country? More than 200 minor leaguers were killed during World War II. And, of course, the minor leagues back in the 40s, there were fewer major league teams. There were only 16 teams in the majors in the 40s, 8 in each league, which meant there would be, 14 more teams available today. So the talent pool was different. In other words, doing a lot of reading about other things that you can then relate to what you're doing. And his entire point was, look, we're not writing about sports, we're writing about people who happen to be in sports. Very pleased to be joined by the outstanding Josh Yowie, DKSports.com. Josh, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Oh, good to be back with you.
It's great to have you back with us. All right. I love the game. I watched the game. I felt like I didn't learn much about this series out of last night's game. What did you learn out of last night's game other than the fact the Penguins won?
Well, it was a peculiar game, and the Penguins got lucky last night, frankly. They were certainly outplayed for most of the game. To see them go 37 minutes without a shot on goal and to still score 5 goals, it was certainly bizarre. One thing I will tell you, the Penguins always have an advantage in speed, and they didn't really have that last night. Nashville is a much faster team than they're used to playing, so they'll have to make that adjustment. But I don't know what we learned either, because it just it didn't even feel like a final game, because the Penguins scored these 3 goals quickly, and they were in control, but they never really played well. I think we'll probably know a lot more after tomorrow night.
Agree with that. I want to ask you about the call on the offside that negated the PK Subban goal. I mean, I know they looked at it closely from every angle and probably more TV angles than we had at home because of the various networks that are covering this. Mm-hmm. What did you think of the call?
I thought it was probably correct. However, I don't know that it was so conclusive that I think it should have been overturned. And that happens a lot with offside rulings. We are literally talking about a fraction of an inch on these rulings, and I can tell you the players don't like it. Players don't have a problem with goals being overruled if it wasn't across the line. And that's pretty clear most of the time, and that's fine. But offside's a little different, and the Predators were not happy, as you might imagine. And even a couple of the Penguins kind of said, we got a little lucky with that one. The Penguins didn't even think it was offside or know that it was. Their video coordinator, a guy named Andy Saucier, was watching the feed in the Penguins locker room, and he immediately called Mike Sullivan on his headphones and said, hey, I think this might be offside. Otherwise, the Penguins never even would have challenged it.
Pecorini's had, for the most part, an outstanding career, and for the most part in these playoffs, he's been outstanding. But there's also a lot of time between games for Nashville. Does that show up for a goalie maybe more than other people?
It can, and it's interesting with Pecorini. He does not have good career numbers against the Penguins, and a lot of goalies don't. They're a high-scoring team. But one thing that could be an issue, Rene is a really big man. He's 6'5", and that can come in handy for a goaltender. The one weakness for goaltenders that big, they don't always move side to side all that well. Whereas a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury is not as big of a man, but he's just incredibly athletic, and it helps be taller. Rene doesn't move right to left and left to right exceedingly well, and the Penguins, probably more than any other team in the league because of their skill level and their speed, they force goalies to be athletic and to move side to side. And I wonder if that's not why Rene does not have good numbers against the Penguins. And if this continues, I wonder if the Penguins will be in his head a little bit. He's certainly a gifted goaltender, but he was not at all sharp last night. And I think he made 7 saves on 11 shots. Boy, that's not a good number. That's not going to get it done. If he plays better tomorrow night, then maybe he's fine.
If he doesn't, however, it makes you start to wonder if this is perhaps just a very bad matchup for him.
Could be. Now, he also handles the puck as well as anybody in the league now. He may not be Marty Brodeur, but he handles the puck as well as anybody in the league now. How do the Penguins need to counter that when they, if they ever want to play dump and chase?
Well, I mean, it makes it hard to play dump and chase, and that's what Nashville wants you to do. They want to be so aggressive with you in the neutral zone that you have to get rid of the puck, and they have a goaltender who handles it so well that they will dump it right back out the other way, and that happened a lot last night. And that's something the Penguins need to take a look at. They're not really a dump and chase team by nature. They'll try to beat you one-on-one and try to handle the puck, and they're so gifted that they often can do it, but they still need to pick their spots. And I just felt like the Penguins' puck management was not very good last night. They turned the puck over a lot. They took some unnecessary chances. It was just a weird game, Steve. I mean, it never felt like the Penguins were in control or playing well, and yet they were winning 3-0. You just don't see that. So I don't even know what to make of it. But you're right. Rene does handle the puck well. And the Penguins don't want to dump the puck. It's not really what they do or who they are, but they still need to be a little bit smarter about when they do it and when they don't.
Crosby, as expected in the playoffs, has taken his fair share of hits and some beatings from time to time. But Nashville's more of a finesse speed team, and it looked like they didn't. Does that give, in your opinion, Crosby more latitude because of how Nashville plays this thing?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. It actually looked like a hockey game at times last night, which the last couple of rounds, boy, has Crosby taken some abuse. I mean, he really has it. It got to the point, I actually wrote an article about this last week, Game 6 in Ottawa, he just got pummeled all game, and that was the game where they even squirted a water bottle on him from the bench. And I wrote an article about this. Bobby Orr, of all people, was so upset by how he saw Crosby treated that he personally called Gary Bettman to complain to him and just thought it made the NHL look horrible that its best player was being treated like that. So a lot of people around the league weren't too happy about it, but I don't think you'll see Nashville resort to that kind of stuff. They just want to play hockey. And so I think Crosby will be comfortable. He's had 2 concussions this season. He doesn't need any more shots to the head, for heaven's sake. He just wants to play hockey and have a team that will let him skate and skate with him, and that's what Nashville will do. So perhaps it's a good thing for him.
In a speed-on-speed situation like the Penguins have with Nashville, you'd love to have Carl Hagelin at full strength. Just add another speed guy in there. What is his status?
You know, he was a healthy scratch last night. He could have played, and I was a little surprised that he didn't. Although it turns out that they were deciding between Hagelin and Jake Guentzel to play, and they picked Guentzel to play when you know it, he scored the game-winning goal, so it worked out. I think Hagelin will play tomorrow, and I don't know who will come out. Perhaps Carter Rowney, someone like that, who's had a good postseason, but you got to, sometimes good players have to come out of the lineup. You're right, Nashville's fast. And I think the way you beat them is by using more speed. And they actually look faster than the Penguins last night, and Hagelin's their fastest skater. So it only makes sense that you would want him in the lineup and just go all speed. And I wonder, now that Connor Sheary is playing better and that Jake Guentzel scored a goal the other night, that the Penguins might not reunite that top line with Sidney Crosby in between the two young kids, Sheary and Guentzel. Those three together can absolutely fly, and I think maybe that's the way you beat Nashville, to counter their speed with even more speed. So you'll see changes, and Mike Sullivan said it. You know, he said, I wasn't happy with how our team played, but I'd much rather be in this situation after a win than a loss. So a lot of things to learn from. I would expect a lineup change or two, certainly.
I want to ask you about that, because when you lose a game, and Nashville is the team that's on the losing end, a coach can say, look, we need to make adjustments, and people will look at me and go, okay, you're right, we need to make adjustments, and so they dial in. Then the winning team, of course, well, you know, we need to make adjustments, and everybody goes, yeah, we're fine. If you think about the way it played out last night, that the Penguin players will look at Mike Sullivan and go, yeah, you're right, we need to make adjustments, I don't care if we won.
Well, yeah, I can tell you the Penguins locker room, it felt like a loss last night after the game. They were really unhappy with how they played. So there was no sense of jubilation or celebration in that locker room at all. They knew they got away with one. And I'm interested from Nashville's perspective. You could look at it one of two ways. You could say, well, boy, we outplayed Pittsburgh. Maybe we're better than them. Let's just keep playing like this. Or you can be Nashville and say, boy, Pittsburgh's never going to play that poorly again in this series, and we still didn't beat them. And that can, I think, plant kind of a psychological seed. So, you can look at it either way. But like I said, I think we'll know a lot more about this series after Game 2, because Game 1 was just all over the place.
thought Marc-Andre Fleury did a great job when he was in there. I also felt the first opportunity that Mike Sullivan had to go back to what I think is his guy, Matt Murray, he did. And how do you evaluate Murray? Where is he right now? How well did he play last night?
I thought he was okay last night. He wasn't great. But the beauty of Matt Murray, he's like the starting pitcher who keeps you in every game. That's just who he is. He's not going to steal many games the way a Marc-Andre Fleury might. Murray just is not as physically gifted as Fleury. He's not that kind of goalie. But he's also not going to implode the way Fleury does it on occasion as well. Murray never gets rattled. He's just always solid. He keeps you in every game. And when you consider that the Penguins are the highest scoring team in hockey, it makes sense that Murray would be such of a great fit to play, because you know, he's never going to give up more than three goals. That's just who he is. So I think he's pretty well healthy now from the groin injury that he suffered in the opening night of the playoffs. Is he completely locked in and at his best? Maybe not, but he's perfectly solid right now, and this stage is not too big for him. We learned that last year.
Josh, you've covered this team every day. You've covered this team for years. So every team takes on its own personality. What's the personality, in your opinion, of this Penguins team?
There's just an incredible resiliency about this team. You know, last year's team that won the Stanley Cup, they won just with speed and talent. This team's different. With Chris Letang out of the lineup and all the injuries they've had to face, the odds have kind of been against them in certain ways. But there's just this kind of quiet, confident professionalism about this team. It's the attitude that I think a team can only take on if it's won a championship before. And there's just a resiliency. You know, it's funny. I think this team had the fewest fighting majors in Penguins history. They're not known for being tough guys. But in some ways, to me, it's the toughest Penguins team I've ever seen. But when you consider mentally what they've had to overcome, the players they've played without, and they just find different ways to win games. If they manage to win this series and win the Cup, in some ways I think it goes down as one of the most beloved Penguins teams in franchise history, because they didn't just win it on talent. It took a lot more than that.
Yeah, that's why I was reading an article, I think it was on ESPN, which hardly covers hockey anymore anyway, and they said, you know, why is this run for the Penguins so tough? I'm like, hey, look, if you looked at it, you'd know why it is.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, and just Letang's absence alone, teams don't win the Stanley Cup without their number one defense. They just don't do it. You look at the teams that have won the Cup in the last decade, it's always, you know, Chris Letang or Drew Doughty or Duncan Keith. The Penguins don't have a guy like that right now, but they just keep finding ways, and I can't help but give the coach a lot of credit for this. I think Mike Sullivan is some kind of a hockey coach, and he just has a feel for the pulse of his team. Every button the guy pushes is right.
Right, exactly. Well, look, this goes back. You mentioned that it goes back to Paul Coffey. It goes back to Brian Leetch. It goes back to Bobby Orr. It goes back to Dennis Popfan. You know, I mean, all these teams always had their top defensemen out there, and the Penguins don't have that.
No, they've got a bunch of solid defensemen. None of them are bad, and they're pretty deep. But you know, Chris Letang is far and above the best defenseman on this team. It's not even close. This is a guy who plays 30 minutes a night in the playoffs, and these guys are all playing 18 minutes a night just trying to get by. And, you know, they're three wins away. How they're doing it, I'm not sure, but they are. It's been quite a story.
Well, and by the way, Montreal fans, Larry Robinson for you, too. All right, thanks so much. Had to make sure if we're going to go through the long litany, we might as well make sure that's included. Josh, always a pleasure, my friend. Great work, as always. I always enjoy it very much, and great to have you back on the show again.
Yeah, anytime. Good talking with you.
Josh Yowie, DKSports.com out of Pittsburgh. We've had him with us before. It's great to have him back with us again. We will wrap up the broadcast extravaganza that is your home for the suit. All right, that's probably not a good one. Probably a home for your Phillies. Is that a better one?
That'll work. Even though both are true.
Yeah, but I think they're prouder of one than the other. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The phones are ringing off the hook at Sunbury Motors Hyundai because right now we're offering the best savings in Hyundai's 30-year history, like up to $6,750 in total savings on the 2017 Sonata. It's called the Better Than Ever Sales Event, and it features the biggest total savings ever offered on Sonata, Elantra, Tucson, and Santa Fe Sport. So there's never been a better time to buy than the Better Better Than Ever sales event. Every Hyundai is also backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain limited warranty. America's best warranty. So visit Sunbury Motors Hyundai, Hyundai now before the biggest savings in Hyundai's Hyundai history are, well, history. Better is the reason to buy a Hyundai, Hyundai, and the Better Than Ever sales event is the reason to buy now. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is Hyundai your home for, well, better. Better prices, better vehicles, and a better buying experience. Sunbury Motors Hyundai, Hyundai in North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury and online at sunburyhyundai.com.
Hyundai.
So during the break, Sean asked me what time my daughter is getting married a week from Saturday.
Careful.
So I said, I don't know. I said, I don't know. I think it's 1 o'clock. Look, I know what my job is. My job is to write checks. Okay, so far I've been good at that. After that, just hand me an itinerary. I'll be there.
Well, I thought this is kind of the equivalent of a kickoff tip-off or airtime. I figured...
You know, I mean, I'll be honest with you. They, you know, I don't have a lot of details. I do know that there have been dresses and fittings and rehearsal dinners and receptions. All I know is that I've been writing checks, and so far they've all cleared. So I feel like, regardless of knowing the time, I've done my job. But I'll have to ask.
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.